This is Digital Story Podcast number 920, November 7th, 2023. Today's theme is How Lightroom Desktop Saved the Day. I'm Derek Story. Like most of you, I have the $9.99 a month Adobe Photography plan that includes Photoshop, Lightroom Classic, Lightroom Desktop, and Lightroom Mobile. And even though Lightroom isn't my primary photo management app, at times I find it very useful. Over the last month was one of those times. And on today's TDS Photography Podcast, I'll share with you why. I hope you enjoy the show. So for the last few years, I've been using a combination of Capture One Pro and Photos for macOS to manage my pictures. Photos is great for the iPhone shots because you take the shot and it goes boom right into Photos, goes right into iCloud, propagates to all your devices. Really good stuff. Really great way to share those iPhone photos. And Capture One Pro works very well for my assignment work, my professional assignment work. That doesn't need to be in the cloud. I'm loading raw files into Capture One Pro. I'm editing those files. I output them to whatever specification the client wants, and then I share those via Dropbox or some other way. So Capture One Pro works really well for that type of work, and its raw decoding is actually quite good, as I've talked about before. But I also maintain my Adobe Photography plan because, well, there are times when I find it very useful. Plus, it has Photoshop, which I don't use as much as I used to, but sometimes Photoshop is what you need to do. I like the photo merge in Lightroom. I like the HDR tools in Lightroom. So there's a lot of things that the photography plan gives me. It fills in those gaps when Photos or Capture One Pro doesn't have exactly what I need. So I really like having that plan, and I feel like even though it's not my primary photo management tool at $9.99 a month, at the end of the year, I feel like I get my money's worth. Now, all of this got even better with the recent Lightroom Desktop update version 7.0. Lightroom Desktop used to be Lightroom Creative Cloud. It's not Lightroom Classic. That's the best way to describe it. Now, I like Lightroom Classic, and Lightroom Classic is still more powerful in terms of advanced editing tools and probably in terms of things like options during import, stuff like that. But I don't need all of that because it's not my primary photo management tool. But I really like a lot of the adjustments and technology that Adobe is either purchasing or developing on their own. And I get that in Lightroom Desktop as well. The problem I had with Lightroom Desktop was that it was tied to my Creative Cloud account, which only had 20 gigabytes of storage. Whenever I worked on photos in Lightroom Desktop, then I was chipping away at my 20 gigabytes, which means at some point I had to take something else out. And the whole thing was just kind of a headache, and it bummed me out because I actually really like what's happened to Lightroom Desktop, and I really enjoy using it. So with version 7.0, oh my gosh, they answered my prayers. They uncoupled Lightroom Desktop to Creative Cloud. And I don't mean they uncoupled where you can't use Creative Cloud with anymore. No, absolutely not. I mean, Lightroom Desktop is still the best way to tap your images in Creative Cloud, but you don't have to use Creative Cloud to use Lightroom Desktop anymore. You can use that app to work on images that are on your local drive, on your SSD or whatever you happen to be using. This changes everything. Now, when you're working on those images and you get one the way that you want, and you want to put it in Creative Cloud, you just click a button and up it goes. So that part is not hard at all, but you don't have to use it anymore. So suddenly, for me, Lightroom Desktop is so much more useful, so much better, because it is now more flexible, and that flexibility is really what I want from that app. So now I can point Lightroom Desktop to my organized picture folders on my hard drive without worrying about exceeding my iCloud storage limit. I can use its cool new tools such as AI Denoise, which, have you tried AI Denoise yet? Oh my gosh, it's really good. Lens Blur, which is still under development, but seems to work pretty well for me right now. And I can use those tools on any RAW file on my hard drive. So I'm really a happy camper. And this was right before I got the Nikon ZF for testing. Here's where things get even more interesting. I get the Nikon ZF and I want to write a review and I want to talk about it on the podcast, all that stuff that I like to do. Well, I can't really give a full review of this camera if I can't work with the RAW files. The RAW files are super important to people who listen to this podcast, who read my articles, all that sort of stuff. So Capture One Pro at first wasn't quite ready for them. And I go, okay. Lightroom Desktop was right away. And this is one thing I really love about Adobe is that they stay on top of the new RAW files for the new cameras. I mean, they are on top of it. So yes, I could use Nikon's apps, but I don't really want to do that. When I talk about RAW file decoding, I like talking about it in the context of apps that people are using every day, Lightroom, Capture One Pro, that kind of thing. I was really happy to see that Lightroom Desktop could decode those files. So right away, I took a little sigh of relief. Okay, I can do this. And then, not too long thereafter, Capture One Pro had an update. Remember, I'm still using this application for my OM1 files, for my Fujifilm X100V files. You know, I'm using the application regularly. I kept checking, and then I saw an update was available that included RAW compatibility for the ZF. Right on. It was version 16.2.5. Capture One Pro 16.2.5. So I downloaded it and, got it on my hard drive. I entered my perpetual license key that I have for 16.2 or for all of the 16s, I thought. And the updated version would not accept my perpetual license key that did work with 16.2.2. And in fact, they wanted me to pay $200 for the upgrade to my 16.2.5. Now, I'm sure there was an upgrade discount in there or something, but I was digging around. I didn't find it right away. And at this time, I was going, I'm not going to pay anything for a dot release, right? I mean, they included some new AI stuff I could see. There was obviously new features in there, but all I was really after was the RAW file decoding for the ZF. I go, all right. So I went back to 16.2.2 and said, this is working fine for me. I'll just keep using it for my other cameras. This is where I was really thankful that Adobe, stays on top of the RAW file decoding, because now I said, okay, this is the plan. I'm going to use Lightroom Desktop to review the RAW files for the ZF and off to the races we go. Now, one of the best things about this is the best way to really learn software is to use it, to depend on it. So now I wasn't just casually using Lightroom Desktop. I was depending on it. It was my workflow because I'm shooting with this camera all the time. I need to put it through all its paces in order to write about it, talk about it, all the things that I need to do. And since I do have those 20 gigabytes of cloud storage, what I could do with this new version of Desktop is do everything locally on my SSD, and then the files that I wanted to have on my iPhone in Lightroom Mobile, you just click a button and bang, it goes up. It goes up. And it's still on the local, but now a copy of it, of the RAW file, of the edited RAW file, is in Lightroom Mobile as well. So I could keep playing with it on the iPhone. I can look at it late at night when I'm just, thinking about this or that. Let's say I'm doing some writing and I just want to check a shot. Just pull up the iPhone, look at the shot, that kind of thing. So it was really handy, and I felt like I was much more in control of my cloud storage, you know, with this new system. So I was a pretty happy kid. The workflow was feeling pretty good, and I already know how to use Lightroom, so there wasn't any, you know, big transition there. Let's get to Adobe's decoding of Nikon's RAW files. Over the past week, I've been leading our Wine Country Photography Workshop, and I've been covering it with the ZF. So I'm going, all right, perfect example. The Halloween shoot, the haunted house shoot, was fantastic for testing low light capability. And now Wine Country in all of its fall glory, and I'm telling you, it was on fire. It was beautiful, on fire in terms of color. Those beautiful reds, orange, yellow, you know, all this stuff. So I was going, man, this is going to be really fun. And it was, it was really fun. And the ZF did a great job of recording all that beauty I shot in RAW plus JPEG. So I would have the files come up in Lightroom Desktop, the JPEG next to the RAW files, and, you know, be able to check out the initial decoding of the RAW files compared to the JPEGs, compared to what I've been seeing on the back of the LCD. And Adobe is doing a great job of decoding those RAW files. I mean, they looked really good. Basically, very comparable to the JPEGs. Sometimes the JPEGs would be a bit brighter, but overall, it was very comparable. Now, one of the things that I really like about Lightroom is what they call profile options. And I'm talking about Lightroom Desktop, although this is in Lightroom Classic as well. With the profile options for the RAW files, I could go with the Adobe profile versions, you know, Adobe Color, Adobe Landscape, Adobe Vivid, all of those. And they're all quite good, and they give you some real stylistic choices. But also, you have camera matching. That's there as well. And if you haven't used this, you should take a look at it. Under camera matching, I could tap all of the Nikon profiles that were in my camera. Nikon Flat, Nikon Landscape, Nikon Portrait, etc. This is really cool. And they included all three Nikon monochrome profiles there too. And shooting monochromes with the ZF is a lot of fun. And you have three monochrome profiles that you can select. So I had all of the Adobe Color profiles and all the Nikon profiles. I would just browse through them to see what's the best starting point for interpreting this file. And I really appreciate that. And I thought it gave me a really good jumping off point for these images, because sometimes if I was shooting an entire vineyard that was reds and oranges and all the stuff going on, I would probably go for a more dramatic profile. If I was shooting an old barn, you know, with old wood and kind of rusted hinges and stuff, I would use maybe a different profile as a starting point. So I like that a lot in Lightroom, and it was really a lot of fun using those as jumping off points. And then I would go through and do the normal adjustments. And of course, some of the adjustments that Lightroom has are just fantastic. I particularly like their section that has clarity, dehaze, texture. And one thing I really like about what Lightroom does is that they put they have the slider, and they put the starting point in the middle of the slider. For instance, when you're shooting a vineyard and you have kind of this late day lighting and you have the rolling hills with the color and everything, I might not necessarily want to go, you know, overly sharp with that image. I might want to soften it, get more of a painterly feel to the shots. And that's where you take, for instance, the clarity slider, and instead of moving it to the right to sharpen everything, which is what we normally do, move it a little bit to the left, and you go, wow, that's really pretty. That's very artistic. And I thought the Nikon files responded very well, you know, highlight recovery, shadow recovery, adding or subtracting clarity, sharpening, all that stuff. Then, of course, I had the fun tools like the new blur tool, which I thought was, you know, really, really a blast. If you haven't used Lightroom Desktop in a while, and let's say you use Primary something else, and you haven't really kept up with the tools, it is a pretty comprehensive set of tools, and there's all sorts of good stuff. I mean, for example, you might not be aware that there's Content Aware Remove in Lightroom Desktop as well, which works really fantastic. So you have healing, you have cloning, and you have Content Aware Remove. And I remember using it on one shot. I got this really terrific shot of berry vines, and they were fabulous color, orange and red. And there was some green in there. And then there was another plant. I couldn't quite tell what it was, but it had a little bluish tint to it. I framed a really nice still life with it, but it was a little dark, light of the day kind of thing. When I got the image on the LCD and I was editing it, I noticed that there was a Ziploc bag in there. Don't you hate that? I mean, I did not see that bag when I took the shot. So I go, man, how am I going to get it? Because it was in there where all the branches were crossing and all that sort of stuff. I used Content Aware Remove in there to get rid of that Ziploc bag. And you don't kind of do one big thing. You do a little bit at a time, that sort of thing. I probably did maybe 4 or 5 edits on it, approaches on it. It did a great job. It really did a great job. And, you know, it replaced the branching and did all this stuff. I was very impressed with it. Lightroom Desktop really has everything that I need. I have graduated screens if I need them. I have all the basic tools. I'm not someone that's going to do 30 layers on a photo. So most of those tools work great for me. Bottom line on this is I have all those photos sitting on my hard drive. I can point to them from Lightroom. I can point to them from other apps as well, like PhotoLab. You know, they're all just sitting there. They look great. I was able to share them to my iPhone, just like I can do from Photos, except now they're going to Lightroom Mobile, all that stuff. And I was just thinking that I could not have pulled off this testing of the Nikon ZF without Adobe Lightroom Desktop. I mean, it truly saved the day. And I'm always going to remember this if I ever question that $9.99 a month charge that shows up on my credit card. If I hadn't, for instance, used Lightroom much that month ago, oh yeah, but when the next new camera comes around and I need to test it or I need to decode those raw files or I want to use something like the blur background tool, I'm going to be really glad that I have that app sitting on my computer. Really Right Stuff's new Universal L Bracket fits almost any camera. And you can read this entire story on petapixel.com. I have a link in the show notes. Really Right Stuff announced a new L bracket called the MC-LS that is designed to work basically on any camera with the classic SLR design with a perfect fit thanks to 5 levels of adjustment. The MC-LS is described as a premium universal L plate that can securely accommodate most camera body sizes used by photographers. Really Right Stuff says that the MCLS offers 5 levels of adjustment through its sliding L component. It has a side port access window with 28.1 millimeter and a forward and back slide capability of plus or minus 5 millimeters. Reversible anti-twist flange plate, a minimum of 2.95 millimeters and a maximum of 29.89 millimeters, and a forward to aft positioning on these elements, which allows it to perfectly adapt to a specific camera shape. Really Right Stuff adds that the camera socket to the L component can be adjusted between 43 millimeters and 76.2 millimeters. That seems like a fair amount of adjustment room to me. Quote, the MCLS or multi-camera L set is designed to be the one plate that seamlessly fits your camera. It is the ultimate choice for photographers who demand the utmost in versatility, durability, and performance. Whether you're a professional photographer or an avid enthusiast, the MCLS is here to elevate your photography to new heights, providing unparalleled confidence in every shot, Really Right Stuff says. While it probably won't fit on any camera, it should reliably adapt to any camera that uses classic SLR design, and that has become basically unspoken standard for photo and hybrid cameras. Really Right Stuff shows it attached to cameras as small as the A7C to as large as a Fujifilm GFX medium format body. Of note, the company stipulates that it doesn't work on cameras like the Nikon Z9, as taller bodies like it would have their ports blocked by the bracket. The same can be said for cameras equipped with a battery grip. Once on a camera, it can attach to a wide range of Arca-style accessories like tripods, gimbals, and monopods, thanks to its use of Really Right Stuff dovetail standard. The MCLS L bracket is designed and manufactured in the United States and is available directly from Really Right Stuff for $140. And there's a link to it in the article, of course. So I think this is really neat because L brackets do come in handy for a number of photography applications, but Really Right Stuff, as we all know, is not cheap. I think it's worth the money, but having one bracket that you can use on even two cameras or maybe three cameras, wow, that really changes things. So I think this is a wonderful idea from Really Right Stuff, and possibly it may solve a problem for you. How to find and use the advanced computational features of OM system cameras. You can read this entire article on fstoppers.com. I have the link in the show note. And if you shoot OM system, you're going to want to get to that link and bookmark it, I'm telling you. Let me read you a little bit about this. The OM-1 and OM-5 and their Olympus predecessors have many unique functions. Here are some of the common ones, where to find them, and what they do. In a recent article, I wrote about the advantages of Micro Four Thirds standard and why there is such a large migration of people to it. OM system cameras, in particular, have unique and unusual innovative features that set them apart from other brands. Although most people who migrate to the OM system do so because of the size and weight advantages, it's also those other distinctive features that make the camera stand out from the crowd. Most of these are due to something that is overlooked by camera reviewers and photographers alike: the powerful processor. That, combined with the faster speeds of the smaller, especially the stacked BSI LiveMOS sensor in the OM-1, enables the camera to offer functionalities that are not currently possible with other models or are being adopted years later. Boy, so true. So many features that Olympus and OM systems have developed that now become standard across the industry, but they started with them. All right, here are the features. This is why I think you should bookmark this article if you shoot OM system. Here are the features that he covers in the article. Check this out. I'm just going to go through this list. The fastest RAW. In other words, you can shoot RAW files per second faster than anyone else, except I think the Nikon Z9, which matches it. Never miss the action with Pro Capture. And of course, Pro Capture has now been adopted by both Canon and Nikon, and it is a terrific feature. The ZF has Pro Capture on it as well. Live composite mode, adding solely new light. Live comp mode is a real boon for those who enjoy light painting or shooting fireworks, star and light trails, stuff like that. Live ND, leave those filters at home. Live ND is something that I think most photographers really look forward to with the OM system cameras. It's just fantastic. Handheld ND photography is amazing. In-camera focus stacking, using in-camera HDR, high-resolution mode, and again, this is something that we're seeing adopted by other camera manufacturers. Starry Sky autofocus for nighttime landscapes. Starry Sky AF focuses on the stars and then moves the focus forward to get both the stars and as much of the landscape in focus as possible. And it does this automatically. The best weather sealing and built to survive OM system cameras and the Pro lenses are weather sealed to an IP53 standard. So he covers all of these things in this article. And that's what I'm saying. If you shoot OM system, you've got to look up this article and then bookmark it. Here's the last paragraph. It's amazing the technology that is available in cameras today. And it is good news for the entire industry that the OM system is so innovative and leads the way, introducing new technologies that other brands adopt later. It's good news that Canon and Nikon now have the equivalent of Pro Capture, and it would be great if they made it available across their entire range and not just in the top-end models. I guess he had to get a little needle in there in that last paragraph. But anyway, definitely some great stuff here. This is the kind of stuff that I think good to learn when you're not out in the field and when you're not on the shoot. Practice it at home. Learn how to set it up. Learn how to turn it on, turn it off. Maybe make some notes so that when you do get out in the field and you want to use it, you know where to go and how to enable it. A terrific article, really well done. All right, stick here, a little virtual camera club news. I want to start out with our Inner Circle members. I just spent a week with a group of Inner Circle members at the Wine Country Photography Workshop. And I have to tell you that there's something really special about this whole thing. You know, these are the folks that support this community and this podcast month in and month out. And they get a discount on the workshops. You know, for instance, those who came to the Wine Country workshop, the discount for this one workshop was more than a year's worth of pledges to the Inner Circle. Almost 2 years that discount is worth. It's financially, you know, solid if you're going to be participating. It financially makes sense to do this. And the other thing about it is that there's a camaraderie. Of course, we have the camaraderie online in the Inner Circle space, but you also notice that camaraderie in person when they're hanging out together, you know, when they're sharing stories, because, you know, they know that they have a part of this. They know that they're invested. That's exciting. There's something about that that feels really good. And it feels really good for me to know that people care enough about what we're doing, about the podcast, about the online sites, about the online workshops, about the physical workshops. They care enough to, you know, make sure that we keep going and that it grows and that it becomes even better as it's going to in 2024. So I just want to give a big shout out to our Inner Circle members. Tell the folks that I just hung out with this last week, thank you so much. I truly enjoyed your company. If you want to learn more about becoming a part of the Inner Circle, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Nose around there, and then maybe you can join us. And if you are already an Inner Circle member and you're having any troubles renewing or with billing or anything, Patreon can definitely help you. But if you get stuck, drop me a note as well. And a lot of times I'll know like a little easy fix to fix it. But whatever you do, don't let your membership drop just because you have a little hiccup. Get a hold of me and we'll get it sorted out and we'll keep you up and running. Remember, the new workshop season is going to be announced pretty soon. And you definitely want to have your Inner Circle membership current so that you can get that deposit discounted, or you can get that online workshop discounted and reap those savings. Big thanks to our Inner Circle members. I so appreciate you. And finally, I want to give a huge shout out to our friends at Red River Paper. We're coming into the Red River Paper zone this month, later on this month, when we start our online inkjet printing workshop. By the way, those seats that were available last week, they're gone. So those of you that joined us for the workshop, welcome aboard. Really happy to have you. I have so much good information to share with you. And a lot of that information I got working with our good friends at Red River Paper, who support this workshop and who support this podcast and this community. If you want to see a little bit about what I'm talking about, all you have to do is click on the Red River paper tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Check out their recommendations for different types of paper surfaces, for different types of photos, the special projects you can do, the templates that are available. It's all there. All you have to do is click on that tile. If you want to hang out in a printing community other than our printing community that we have on Derek Story Online, for those that participate in the online workshops, Red River Paper has a Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. A huge thanks to them for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm working on some more great stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, be creative, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.